everybody, and welcome to the Westerners. This is part two of Cartridges and Reloading, and back with me again is Scott Morey.
Hey, everybody.
He's back.
Cool, back.
Yeah. this episode, since last episode, we talked about 30-06 standard cartridges and all the other cartridges that were based off of the 30-06 and the 30-03. On this one, we are going to talk about Magnum, belted and non-belted Magnums, of all shapes and sizes, and what the usefulness of them are, and what they inherently do to bullets, and what they're best suited to. So we might as well start this off with the granddaddy of them all. The 300 H&H.
Good cartridge.
Great cartridge. It had 200 to 250 feet per second over the 30-06 at the time, because all they had was cordite powder. And with a 180-gram bullet, people won the Wimbledon Cup. I mean, it was one of the best 1,000-yard cartridges of the time, just for being flat shooting and being extremely accurate. The only drawback was the taper on the case. In terms now, that would be a drawback, because you don't get as much powder capacity. But 300 H&H was a fantastic cartridge. But inherently, it was the cartridge that John Nosler had a bullet from an unnamed company that failed on a bull moose in a, I think it was a British Columbia hunt that he had it happen on. It ended up blowing up on the side. And that shows where, at the time, in the late 20s, early 30s, that bullets just weren't meant to be shot at that velocity.
Old cup and core bullets.
Yeah, old cup and core bullets. I mean, what did they have at the time? Thin jacket bullet, or the best you could do is Nosler or a Barnes original.
Well, and that didn't even start until late into all this, because, you know, there was only a couple bullet manufacturers that were out there that made those style of bullets. But if you wanted penetration, you went with a full metal jacket. And, you know, if you wanted something that expanded, you went with, obviously, a round tip. But Spitzer bullets weren't all that prominent until World War II, actually, when, you know, we started seeing lots of Spitzer bullets being used in all kinds of rifles.
Yeah, exactly.
But they were all put together for, you know, velocities under 2,600-2,700 feet per second.
Yeah.
They were meant to hold together, and they do. Standard cup and core bullets work great to this day at 2,500 to 2,600. You know, they still work fine. However, when you start pushing them faster than that, you got to have something better. So now, you know, on the scene comes, you know, Nosler's, you know, bullet that he has.
The partition.
And the partition bullet, you know, we could talk about the A-frame.
It changed the game.
It changed. Yeah, it is what, you know, we talk about what things are always equal to, or, you know, they are measured by. And all bullets were measured by, you know, the Nosler partition bullet. You know, there's a lot of people that don't like Nosler partitions because they say, hey, half the bullet explodes. Well, that's what it was meant to do. It wasn't meant to stay together. That front part of that bullet was meant to expand and blow away.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've got a dozen bullets here from back in the 50s that my dad and my grandfather shot out of aught-sixes, that the beautiful mushrooms.
Yeah.
You know, they probably have like about 80% of their weight left of them because they shed the front portion, but they've got just gorgeous mushroom bullets.
That's a hell of a lot more than a cup and core bullet's gonna hold. Cup and core bullets will shed upwards of 70% of their weight out of a Magnum.
Hence, going to a larger bullet, you know, yeah. Back in the day. You had to use a larger bullet to get the same type of penetration you get nowadays. But you know, now that the tables are all leveled, you take a bonded 250 grain bullet versus a bonded 115 grain bullet, and a bonded 250 grain bullet is going to go through a car block at 500 yards, you know, whereas that bonded 117 grain bullet, 115 grain bullet for that 25 caliber, you know, it's going to go through an ungulate out there, and it's going to do pretty good damage on any big size game.
Yeah, exactly. Which led the Holland and Holland manufacturers, or the Holland and Holland company, to make the second one of my favorite cartridges, the 375 H&H, which shot out of the factory a 270 grain bullet at, I think it was 2,400, 2,500 feet per second. And people started carrying that for everything. And here in the West, it was extremely, extremely popular. Or not in the West, but Alaska.
Alaska is still popular to this day. It has the same trajectory as a 180 grain 30-06 bullet.
Yeah, exactly. Well, now we're getting more velocity out of it.
Right.
The 375 H&H will shoot a 270 grain bullet at 2,750 feet per second. And that's hard hitting. Like, that's breaking bone and going through. I mean, that's hard to stop. And that's why it was so venerable. And that's why Remington made their 721. And Winchester made their Model 70, and why so many custom manufacturers made their, what was it, the P-17? Is the P-17?
P-17 was used a lot. You know, a lot of the gunsmiths liked to get those because they were extremely strong actions. They'd take a hacksaw, cut the rear sight off, and then grind the rest of it down.
Yep.
To get it, you know, to where you could get a receiver sight on it, you know.
Or a scope. Not so much at the time.
You know, in the 50s, yeah. You know, you're talking about scopes, you know, relatively starting to become down close enough to where the standard sportsman could, you know, afford a 2.5 power Alaskan.
Your favorite.
Yeah. Which is it's a cool little scope, but, you know.
It's hellish. It's damn near.
Horrible little optic. I mean, it worked good. It was better than a set of open buckhorn sights, but I think maybe a peep sight might be better than...
Well, we were talking about that earlier, where the further you get your front sight from your rear sight, it just makes it that much better.
Yeah, the further the sight, the longer the sight plane it is, the better off you are.
Yeah, exactly. But people didn't like the 375 H&H because it was too damn long. And then Winchester got the smart idea in their head that they could take a 375 H&H and blow it completely out and shorten it to where it would fit in the already existing 30-06 length actions. And then they brought out the series of some of the best cartridges that have ever existed compared to 30-06, the 30-30. And the 308 Winchester, the 264 Winchester, the 338 Winchester, and the 458 Winchester Magnum. They brought out the Westerner, which is partially what the show is named after. And that is the 264 Winchester. And it's a great cartridge. And at the time, it wasn't what people wanted.
Well, they wanted it. They just didn't know what they wanted.
They wanted the 7-mag is what they wanted.
And that's what Remington did. Remington went, okay, let's see what's going on. And obviously anybody that listens to podcasts on a regular basis and does their history know where the 7-mag started at. And
it was here in Wyoming.
Yeah, it was in Wyoming. And
Les Bowman.
Les Bowman, working with one of the local gunsmiths there in Cody, cut down the 300 Magnum and capped it off with a 7mm bullet. And eventually Remington said, hey, that's a great idea. But, you know, no Magnum show should go without, you know, Winchester started it with those three, but it, right on their heels and having things, you know, in the process already was Roy Weatherby.
And Roy Weatherby was in the game in 1944.
Right.
With the 270 Weatherby Magnum.
And the 270 Weatherby Magnum did not take off all that well because it was the cost of the rifles. But, you know, he pushed the Magnum to the next level in the 60s.
But you know, even in the 50s, he pushed it.
And, you know, to even go even further than that, so in 1958, most of those cartridges came out from Winchester, the 264, 338, and the 458. They all came out on each other's heels. But one cartridge in particular, you know, outside of the Weatherby cartridges, which were out there, that was produced, that just, you know, would have most likely had a rifle that it was chambered in instead of just having brass, was the 358 Norma Magnum.
And the 308 Norma Magnum.
And the 308 Norma Magnum. Both of them. Were both set on cartridges that could work through a standard action.
And that's your favorite cartridge is the 358 Norma Magnum.
And it's, you know, it's why it's why Winchester took their 300 Winchester mag and, you know, blew the shoulder out a little farther forward because Norma had already had out on the market the 308 Norma mag, which, you know, looks like a, you know, it's basically a 3338 or a 3264, you know, it's a
standard length,
you know, Magnum action, you know, for those kinds of rifles. But
and you didn't have to buy a 300 H&H.
You didn't have to buy a 300 H&H for a bundle of money or a Weatherby cartridge. And that 338 Winchester mag became one of the, you know, the carrying rifles for anybody that was going to have one gun.
Yeah.
There's stories about stories about bears being shot up there in Alaska with the 33 Winchester and, you know, later on the 348 Winchester. And the 348 Winchester is a good all-around bear gun up there, but when people could get a hold of a 25-inch long tube bolt action that carried, you know, a 250-grain bullet that was traveling another almost 200 feet per second faster than the 348, they traded their 348s in for those Model 70s right away.
And then they discontinued the 348.
And the 348 was kind of like, yeah, an afterthought. That Model 71 was the epitome of the lever guns.
But honestly, that 348 Winchester had the case capacity to be a short Magnum.
Yeah, it was a Magnum.
But it couldn't be, the pressures, as strong as that Winchester action was, you couldn't get that 348 Winchester to be a 338 Win Mag. And that was the downside. And that's why they, unfortunately, as much as I love the 348 Winchester, they discontinued it in 1936. But now, modern production.
Yeah, well, it was supposed to emulate, you know, the deal was, is it was supposed to emulate in a short action, you know, as an .06 cartridge. But, you know, there again, we're trying to get more and more boost out of it. And then we, you know, fast forward into the 50s. And now, you know, I was, you know, alive when Magnum Mania hit in the early 70s, late 60s, early 70s. Remington, Winchester, everybody was, you know, everything was a Magnum. You know, that we have all those great pistol cartridges that come out that Elmer Keith, you know, the 41 Magnum, the 44 Magnum, you know, all those cartridges that came out, everybody was labeling them Magnums. But, you know, in reality is a Magnum, most of the Magnums that everybody sees out there are based off of the 375 H&H, the 300 H&H cartridge, which with a belt. And, you know, that belt made up for, you know, having the headspace on it. There was no There was no guessing on where the headspace was at on it.
Yeah.
A belted cartridge, there's no guessing on where the head spacing's at on it. It headspace is on that belt. Therefore, you didn't have to have the accuracy of being able to get that shoulder to, so you didn't have a problem with, you know, shoulder being too forward on a shoulder, you know, head spacing cartridge.
Exactly. Which we'll touch on that later. Yeah. All right. Huge part of this is on to magnums that do not have belts. But there are so many magnums that do have belts that have been around forever. And after everybody tried to hem and haw and bring out their calibers that were gonna cure every single animal that there were out there and and was going to be the round that ended it all, Winchester pulled a rabbit out of their hat and they introduced the 300 Win Mag, which
1962
in the model 70, just before it went to the post 64 XTR. They brought out the 300 Win Mag,
and the biggest fight between cartridge lovers ever broke out in 1962, wherein the 70mm Remington Magnum and the 300 Winchester Mag have been in the ring against each other ever since 1962.
I've shot a lot of stuff with both, and I know you have shot a lot of stuff with both. And what do you think?
I like both cartridges. There are uses for both of them. The 300 Winchester Mag is a really good cartridge for, 180 to 200 grain bullets if you're running to drive them really fast. It doesn't do well with larger bullets for some reason. I've never had really good. We were shooting those 240 grain
Woodlays. Yeah, 240 grain bullets,
and they just seem to kick like a bay mule. You could get a 338 to shoot a 250 grain bullet that didn't kick as hard as the 300 did with that. But
that 300 would kick them out at 2,800 feet per second.
It really moved, you know.
It's a lot of case capacity,
which, you know, blows me away that, you know, it does. It has a lot of case capacity comparatively. But the 7 Mag with that 28 caliber bullet
just carries.
Carries it. It has that magic BC, and any one bullet the same size as a 30 caliber past 200 yards, you start seeing a differentiation.
Yeah.
300 yards, you really start seeing the differentiation. Further than that, and the 7 Mag starts to carry out with 170 grain bullet versus 180 grain.
It carries better.
It carries better. And it hits harder out at 400 and 500 yards than does a 300 mag.
Yeah.
By much, but yeah, those two cartridges right
there.
It
is enough to notice.
I tend to like the 7 mag more. I hunted a long time, and that's all I carried was that 7 mag, and my cousins were all about the 300 Winchester mag. Except one. I had an uncle that carried nothing but a 308 Norma Mag. He got out of the Army back in 1962, and he happened across the deal on an original Norma rifle.
A Husqvarna.
Yeah, a Husky. Yeah. And it was in 308 Norma Mag, and he used that on everything. 180 grain bullets. He used factory 180 grain bullets out of the Norma.
For moose in British Columbia.
Moose, elk. Yeah. You know, he used it up in Alaska for bear and such. You know, he shot everything with that 308 Norma Mag, which there isn't much difference between it and the 300 Winchester Mag, because the Norma's blown out straight. And it's only a couple, 5 or 6 grains differentiation in powder between the two of them. The Norma has longer neck, which is supposedly inherit more accuracy than the short neck of the 300 Winchester mag, which it always gets beat up over. But, you know, I've never seen a difference in that. But they're all the same, pretty much, you know. They're all belted magnums based off of that 300 H&H, 375 H&H, and they all, you know, have little niches that they carry. You know, and of course, you know, you go through the Weatherby, and Weatherby's all about
That's a different thing with the Weatherbys.
Right.
Roy just took, like, with the 300 Weatherby, he took the full-length case of the 375 and 300 and blew it all the way out. Now, that takes you into a completely different bracket.
Which is, you know, magnum, but the majority of his cartridges that came out, you know, like the 270 and the 7mm and the, you know, those and the 257, which was his favorite, you know, were all based off of those standard length cartridges.
Yep.
Besides the 240, which is a totally different animal in itself.
Which is still a fantastic cartridge.
It's a 30-06 case with a belt, you know.
Which is the weirdest thing ever.
But it's the neatest doggone cartridge that's out there. And I think for a 6mm, it's probably one of the best, you know, overall, if you're going to have something east of the Rockies here that you're going to shoot nothing but deer and antelope with, that 240 Weatherby probably is the ticket. You know, it'll shoot a you know, 105 grain bullet faster than fast out there, and as long as you're using Barnes X bullets
or nozzle partitions, Acubons,
you know. And then there's the 257 that I think is a really good cartridge for out. I think the 257 actually, now that we have X bullets, the bullets don't explode. Now, I personally sat and watched my grandfather shoot about a 350-400 yard shot on a broadside buck, big buck with a 257 with Weatherby cartridges,
120 grain.
With, had the 120 grain
power core.
Yeah, the power core bullets.
We still have the boxes.
He hit that deer three times, and the deer jumped every time he hit it. And one of the guys in our party was over there closer. We hollered across, the deer kind of slumped its way into the brush, and George Pritchard shot it with a 35 Remington at about 75 yards away and killed a deer and a doornail.
What a long shot.
We got over there and you know, started skinning the animal out, and all three of those bullets at 350 yards had done nothing but make a huge, nasty surface wound on the deer that the deer probably would have survived. But I mean, it was horrendous. I mean, hit the deer with those things in the same spot, and they were dead kill shots. Didn't even break bone, the rib cage, but a 35 Remington did. A 35 Remington from 75 yards away knocked that deer down for good.
Which shows bullet performance.
Yeah, bullet performance. 200 grain core lock.
You can't have a magnum and shoot a standard bullet.
No, and now that we have the X bullet and the nozzler partitions and the A-frames and all those, that 257
bullets.
Yeah, the bonded, yeah, the AccuBonded bullets.
Sir Shaka.
110, 117 grain bullet, you know, and that 257 Weatherby now makes that a borderline elk cartridge, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, I digress. Those three cartridges that Weatherby put out were all based off the same length, you know, and then of course, you know, he blew up. It went to the 300 and the 300, you know, the 300, the 340, the 375 Weatherby, which was, you know, just the...
That was the 80s, you know, though. I mean, still.
You know, and then, you know, they went to the super cartridges after that, and that's a totally different situation. Those were well above and beyond.
Oh, those are saved for last ones.
Yeah. But for the most part, all the magnum cartridges that are out there today, you know, 90% of them are all based off of the 300 and 375 H&H with the belt.
Yeah, exactly. And that brings brings us into the flop that unfortunately is the 8mm Remington Magnum.
One of my favorite rifles.
I know, it was a huge flop.
It was how they released it. You know, the 8mm Remington Magnum in comparison, it with a 26-inch barrel, Remington put it out with a 24-inch barrel, which immediately hampered it. You know, you might as well just shoot
a 300 Win Mag.
Yeah. Most Magnums produced better results with 26-inch long barrels. You know, 25, 26-inch long barrels. A lot of people will argue that you only need a 22 to 24-inch barrel for something like that. But in reality, if you look at some of the things and some of the old cadres that I worked with, you know, in monkeying around with guns and things, my 358 Norma Magnum was built on a 300 Winchester Mag, early model, late 1970s, early model, Tang safety model 77 Ruger. And when I built that rifle, the gunsmith, I said, I don't want much of a barrel on it. He says, oh yeah, you do. That 358, he says, I want you to have at least a 26-inch barrel on that thing. He goes,
that thing screams.
You're going to find out that this thing performs, and it's not going to make that much difference going through the brush with it. And he was right. I killed a lot of elk with that. And I mean, they're dead customers right away. I started shooting a 275 grain Barnes original bullet out of that thing. And, you know, at 400 yards, you could keep it in the 10 ring all day long with a 1.5-5 scope on top of it.
Exactly.
And I really like that cartridge. And it's a good cartridge for anything. I mean, it's a good Alaska cartridge. It's a good cartridge down here if you want to drop down. But the thing is, if you start dropping down in bullet size, if you're dropping down in bullet size to less than 200 grains, then why are you shooting a Magnum?
But that goes to even the Whalen, where I start to... And this is a digression to this, but having a lighter bullet and a caliber that size, you should just drop down in caliber. If you're going to shoot a 225 grain bullet, you're wasting your time with a 358 and above, and you might as well go back to a 338 or... God forbid you go to 30 caliber. Honestly, it's a sweet spot where you go, if it's going to be a 225 grain bullet, do a 338. And that's where the 358 comes into its own ilk, where you go, 250 grain bullet is a great balance between 338 and 375. And then when you go to a 275 grain bullet, you've got better penetration and better long-range carrying compared to a 375 H&H, the Norma Mag. It beats the 375 H&H.
With a 270-grain bullet, yeah.
With a 270-grain
bullet. The 375, once you get up above a 300-grain bullet, it starts to make hay. But the reality is, with a 275 to 280 grain bullet, especially if it's one of the Barnes originals or the new Swift A-frame 280 grain bullet, or the Woodlays, that 358 Norma Magnum will kill anything that walks this planet relatively quickly. So therefore you're not shooting as much powder as you would be in a 375, and you're getting the same exterior ballistics. It's the old exterior ballistics things. How small of a cartridge can I shoot to get close enough to be like the bigger cartridge? And that's the sweet spot. But, you know, I carry the 358 Norma because, it makes believers or whatever you hit. Now, I will tell you this, it dishes out on both ends.
Yeah,
it does. It doesn't kick as hard as a 375 H&H,
but it kicks harder than a 338 Win Mag.
But you can tell when you touch that thing off that somebody's gonna be.
You know, that's funny. I noticed that the 358 Norma Mag kicks harder than the 375 H&H, in my personal experience, and I think it's just because the case capacity is the exact same. almost the exact same. It's probably about 3 grains difference. And I would say that Norma Mag carries those bullets faster than the H&H does. And I think more effectively with less powder. And it's just, it's a great caliber. But, I mean, that's still in the ilk where everybody goes, oh, I don't want to, now it's like, oh, I don't want a belted magnum. I don't want a belted cartridge. I mean, there's tons. You've got, I mean, the 8mm Remington mag may have been a flop, but what did we get out of it? The 7mm Shooting Times Western.
Yeah, and the 358.
Shooting Times Alaskan.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, that there was already, you know, prior to those, there was already the 340 Weatherby. You know, and the 340 Weatherby does everything the 338 Winchester does, but a little bit better with a longer case. But whenever you put Weatherby on there, it's like adds another 25% on top of your cost. So
right.
8mm Remington Magnum cases were relatively easy to get for a long time.
Yeah.
And, you know, people started messing with them. And, of course, the 7mm was the one that first came out.
Yeah.
And I think it legitimately for an all-around cartridge, you know, the 7mm Shooting Times Westerner is probably one of the only ones that I would go with other than just right. a standard 7 mag, you know.
Right.
But it does, you know. They shoot to where it shoots far enough to where you can make a 500-yard shot relatively effectively with that rig.
With 160,
170. And obviously you're going to have to use something that's a little bit stouter because, once again, you're stepping up the velocities and you don't want the bullet to blow up.
No, you're really cranking it. I mean, what, it's like 3,300 feet per second with a 160-grain bullet? It's like 3,250.
Yeah, it is 3,250. Yeah, it's a good 150 to 200 feet per second faster than the 7 mag.
Yeah. And it's with it's just a 7 mag on steroids.
It's a good cartridge. It really is a good cartridge. With a 26-inch barrel and good optics on it, I think somebody could actually, you could hunt anything here in the lower 48 with it.
Yeah.
Effectively. Yeah. Even the rogue nasty grizzly bear you might run into and Bob Marshall or, you know, up in the Wind River.
Or Selaway or something.
Yeah, or someplace, you know, down in that area.
Where they live.
But, I mean, it's a really good cartridge. And I've owned a couple of 8mm Magnums. Both of them had 24-inch barrels.
Which really, like, both of them were... they were on par with my 300 Win Mag.
Yeah, you might as well be shooting a 300 Win Mag out of it because of the, you know, the short tube. If you had gone to a 26-inch barrel, which is what I've always said.
Or longer. Yeah.
You know, at the 220-grain bullets that were produced for it, Hornady produced that 220-grain bullet specifically for the 8mm Remington Magnum.
And so did Spear,
yeah.
Yeah. And that's why they said don't shoot the Spear Spitzer 220-grain bullets through an 8mm Magnum.
Because they don't expand.
It'll be a full metal jacket.
Yeah. And then the, you know, Remington came out with some of, I think, the best ammunition for the 8mm Remington Magnum, and that was with the Swift A-frames that they came out with. They had a 220-grain Swift A-frame, which I think is probably the best cartridge for that 8mm that it ever came out. But that 8mm is not a 338 and it's not a 300.
And
so
that's where it comes into marketing mistake. And that'll be touched on later in a certain subject where our 7mm took off. Our metric caliber took off. And they just stepped it up and they made the cartridge bigger and it just marketing killed the gun.
And it's funny how you've seen that happen because everything got bigger and bigger and bigger, and you know, and the one cartridge that we forgot to say about that, because the 8mm Remington Magnum case spawned all these cartridges, including, you know, the 416 Remington Mag,
which is a great cartridge.
Is legitimately a great cartridge for the man who wants one gun to hunt anything in the world. Period.
Yeah.
You know, it's frustrating to note that, you know, the 458 Winchester Mag is kind of overshadowed by all these, but, you know, it got its bad reputation for the ball powder that in the very early days that clumped together and you'd get, you know, the rounds weren't consistent. But now with our new powders, a 458 Winchester Mag is plenty of gun for anything. In fact, you know, as you brought up in the first, you know, series on this thing, the 458 Winchester Mag is actually listed as the number one best brown bear, grizzly bear defense cartridge out there, period, because of its ability to... Sheer stopping power. Because the 460 Weatherby...
has heinous recoil.
It just has got stupid recoil.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Not to say that the 458 doesn't, but it doesn't... It's more of a push recoil where it's pushing you versus the 378 and the 460 Weatherby are just not even funny. I've shot both of them, and I would much rather put a whole box of ammunition through a 416 Remington than I would a 378 Weatherby.
Which we did a couple of times.
And it's just, it resulted in... yeah, a mess.
I think Jack Watt fixed the 458 Win Mag, though.
Yeah.
In the way that Remington didn't fix the 8mm Remington Mag.
Yeah.
But the 458 Watt didn't take off at all either.
No.
Even though it's a better cartridge than the 458 Win Mag. Well,
it holds more powder, yeah. It puts it on par with the 460 Weatherby, but I think the Watt actually, it does. It puts, you know, it legitimately puts it up there with some of the big stoppers.
Yeah.
You know, the Gibbs, the, you know, that 505 is a big cartridge. And then, you know, the 500, cartridges that are out there right now, you know, that you see. That
but are those are stopping.
Those are stopping rifles.
Yeah. Those are stopping.
And that's what the Weatherby was supposed to be. The 378 and the 460 were supposed to be stopping rifles.
Yeah, that's what they were. I mean, the 416 and the 460.
Yeah, the 416 now, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, those were stopping rifles. But, I mean, look at another cartridge. The, what's another interesting one that is kind of along the lines of something that fell apart on the Magnum belted cartridges. I would say, like, I mean, you look at the 7mm, the one that I never, I always thought was just kind of strange was, I mean, back to it, the 7mm Shooting Times Western, where you go, why would that even take off? That's almost an overbore cartridge. But, I mean, it took off. You see loaded ammo. Manufacturers load the ammo, and then that spurs us on to the next generation of Remington finally came in and said, we are making ultra magnums with no belts, and they are using a non-belted case from quote unquote a 404 Jeffrey, which they are not the same case at all.
It's just similar.
It's similar. It's not the same case, though. And they made the 7mm, the 300 Remington Ultramag, the 375 or the 338 Remington Ultramag.
Yeah, the 375.
But the 338 Remington Ultramag was kind of a redheaded stepchild in the whole list, unfortunately. Because
it's a good cartridge, too.
It's a fantastic cartridge.
Really good cartridge.
But everything below the 7mm Remington Ultramag did not take off.
No.
Because it burnt barrels.
it was burning barrels within two boxes. They were seeing erosion, throat erosion in front of the... That's a lot of powder.
That is.
That's 100 grains of powder you're pushing out of that thing.
Or more.
You know, a standard, a 7 mag round, 70mm Remington Magnum round, generally holds about 62 to 68 grains of 4350. When I was shooting the 338 Remington Ultra Mag, I was loading anywhere between 96 and 104 grains of powder behind.
RL22. Behind a 180 grain bullet. Yeah,
or H1000. H1000, you couldn't get it. It still didn't work well in that cartridge. But so you're talking about almost 45 more grains of powder more than the 7 mag.
Yeah.
So double almost the amount of powder. Now you're really burning barrels faster. You're spending money more, and those cartridges were meant to shoot a long doggone. They were meant to shoot a country mile.
Or they were meant to shoot African Plains game.
416, yeah, the 416 in the in the Remington itself was big enough, but I mean when they went to the 375 Ultra Mag, and it was on par with the 378 Weatherby.
Yeah.
The Weatherby just had a belt on it, but they're very similar cartridges. If you look at them standing next to each other, they're very similar.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
but what would they not do? They wouldn't fit in a standard action.
They would not fit in. You had to have a 375 H&H long magnum action to make them work. And
yeah,
they had a tremendous amount of recoil.
Yeah, it was not even cool.
I broke mine right. I put a brake on mine right away.
Yeah, exactly. And then I mean after that the 300 Remington Ultramag took off, and it was the only cartridge out of that whole lineup that really took off.
And still, it hasn't.
It has not taken hold, but it's still being made.
Yeah, it is.
It's doing better than the other ones.
Yeah, the other ones you don't even see. In fact, I haven't seen a box of 338.
Or 375.
Or 375.
Or 7mm.
Or 7mm. You know, you see the Shooting Times Western stuff all over the place.
Yeah. And it's just because they don't want to do it anymore. There's so many other cartridges.
Yeah. It's we went to that end, and you know, we got out to that far, and as soon as they got out to that far with those beltless cartridges, Winchester and Remington came back and went, well, maybe we went too far.
And then Winchester kicked Remington in the right in the groin and went, we're going to make Winchester short mags.
We're going to take the 404 Jeffries cartridge and we're going to cut it down. And we're going to make that, I mean, yeah, half the, we're going to make them fit in a 308 short action.
We're going to make long magnums short magnums.
Yeah, make them work through it. And it's just been this whole thing to where, you know, it's marketing. We got to have something new to go. You know, we got to have something new to move forward. And I don't know. I tend to be more of an old school firearms guy. I don't think there's been anything that's been changed since probably outside of the powders and bullets. I think we hit our apex in the 50s.
Yeah.
And I think nothing has really changed. It's just been different. You know, once the Magnums came out, yeah, great. 338 Remington, or 338 Winchester Mag, great cartridge. 300, you know, Winchester Mag, great cartridge. 7mm, you know, Mag, extremely great cartridge for all kinds of, you know, and those three cartridges right there probably stand out as the most visible cartridges you're going to see magnum wise. I think you could walk across a rack and find any of those. But you know, they do everything that all the new cartridges that have come out that do. You know, people say things have become more accurate, and it's not the cartridges, it's the technology of putting the firearms together that has gotten more precise.
Yeah.
And that's it. So when we start talking about these magnum cartridges that you know people wanted to shoot a country mile, in reality is we already had those, you know, and he didn't need to have that extra powder behind there. You just have to
know how to shoot.
My grandfather called them the lazy men's guns.
Yeah.
He carried a 338 Winchester mag for elk. And he shot
with open sights.
Yeah, with it actually had receiver sights on it.
A Model 70 with Alaskan.
With receiver sight on it, yeah. But, you know, my dad carried nothing but a 30-06 forever, and it's killed everything that he's ever come up against.
Yeah.
So all these new fangled cartridges that have come out, and based along especially like the 6.5, you know,
you can't talk about that gun on my show.
The 6.5, you know, but you have to back up and you have to say, okay, fine. So if we're going to look at a Magnum cartridge, and how come there is only one? Okay, albeit, no, I can't say that now. There's more than that now, because there's actually one of my more favorite 6.5 cartridges out there, and it's the Nosler.
Oh yeah, the 26 Nosler.
The 26 Nosler is actually a really super good cartridge.
But it's a 264 Winchester.
It's a 264 Winchester, you know.
Reinventing the wheel.
Yeah, and
Winchester killed that cartridge with a 24-inch barrel.
And the bullets, the selection they had, you could only get 140 grain bullets in it. And that's why the 7 Mag beat it out in 62, because the 7 Mag, Remington immediately came out with the 175 grain
Corlocks, yeah,
which I know for a fact killed everything in Alaska with one shot, because I have the rifle that did it. My first rifle, my 70mm Remington Magnum, was serial number is only five numbers. And it was one of the first ones to come off the assembly line that was given to a friend of my grandfather's to take with him to use with the Remington group in Alaska to take the big five up there.
Yeah.
And that 7mm Remington mag killed, you know, a polar bear, a grizzly bear, a moose, a caribou, muskox, and then any number of other things. And that's all they shot was 175 grain bullets out of it. And it killed everything up there in Alaska. And the one thing that old Irwin McCall used to tell me, you know, the same thing that my grandfather said, and that's shot placement.
Mm-hmm.
How did you kill all that stuff? Shot placement.
Yeah.
I knew. And of course, before, believe it or not, that rifle that I have, you can see where the receiver sight was on it before they put the 2.5 power Alaskan on
it. It's got a cut on the side of the stock.
On the side of the stock where the Lyman receiver sight was on it, which is what he had there in Alaska, because the Alaskan scope actually failed.
Yeah.
You know, and they had to take it off, and he used receiver sights to shoot everything with that 7 mag. And that's enough said right there. For, you know, somebody from 1963 to go up to Alaska and be able to kill everything up there with one shot, you know.
With a 7 mag.
With a 7 mag.
And I know a lot of people who don't like the 7 mag. And that's because of poor bullet choice. And every time that I've ever cranked out ammunition with premium bullets and handed it to somebody, they go, wow, that made the 7 mag better. It's like, yeah, the 7 mag is up there. It is one of the best. And it's pretty tame for recoil. If you can't handle a ton of recoil, if you can't handle 300 Win Mag recoil, the 7 mag gives you 30-06, a little bit above 30-06 power at closer range, but carries better. And doesn't give you the recoil of a 300 Win Mag.
No, it does not kick anywhere near as much as a 300. It kicks very similar to a 30-06.
Son of a gun is, when you hear it, you know it's a 7 Mag, though.
They do, yeah, they boom. They boom. And, you know, even though I've got a 24-inch tube on this one, a 26 would make it a better rifle because of how much powder it burns. You know, it's a, it likes 64 grains of 4350 behind a 150 grain bullet.
Yeah.
It will shoot that all day long. And you can cover it all, you know, at 200 yards, you can cover the 10 bolt with it all day long.
Yeah.
I don't carry it anymore. You know, I quit carrying my 7 mag for most of anything, period, almost 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it, because it, once again, it was bullet construction. I had a deer, one of the first deer that I shot. I had a spine shoot him. I hit him twice in the boiler room. Both the bullets went through and didn't expand. And then the third shot actually pulled up and hit him in the spine, knocked him down dead in a doornail at over 300 yards. The next year I shot a fork and horn, same situation, at about 350, 400 yards. Had to hit him twice, same spot. But, I mean, you're going to hear guys say, oh, I hit it with a 7 mag and they dropped. Well, that's it. I did. I had that happen, too. But I had issues with it on elk. And this is back in the 70s and the early 80s when we didn't have the bullets we have nowadays. But I was shooting the 150 grain core locks, you know, and once I stepped up and used the 175 grainers, which was the last bullets that I used before I started reloading my own for 150 grain core locks, those 175 grain core locks had enough lead in them that they did exactly what Irwin did up there in Alaska. But the 7mm Mauser did well with those size bullets too.
Yeah.
So it was bullet, you know, so bullet construction means you can, better bullet construction means that you can have a smaller, lighter bullet that's just as effective as a larger bullet in some aspects. But I still don't carry my religion through technology. It's size of the bullet, you know.
Yeah.
As we sit here with a non-Magnum
401 Winchester.
Well, which is really actually, it's a Magnum. It's a Magnum of its day. I mean, because...
It's a semi-automatic Magnum.
Because you look at that and you go, okay, well, there was four of them. There was, you know, the 32.
Yep.
You know, the 35, the 351, and the 401. And the reason why they made the 401 is because the other three weren't heavy enough, you know. And of course, this was touted as an Alaska rifle, you know.
In the advertisements, it was dudes standing in front of a bear charging him, and they're getting ready to shoot it with a 401 Winchester.
And it hits. It's the cartridges, you know. Now, it's like a deer field. You know, 44 Magnum. I think, you know, 44 Magnum would be a lot easier to put back together. But I think, you know, sectional density wise, these 240 grain bullets out of this thing, it's a Magnum of its day. And, you know, it did. It was to the point to where these were rifles, though, were extremely expensive at that time.
Yeah, and nobody could afford them.
They were 2.5 to 3 times the amount that a standard bolt action rifle was that they could get in a bigger cartridge. So
yeah, back in 1910 or in 1915, I saw an advertisement where these guns were $110. That's $1,500 now.
A lot of money.
That's a lot of money. Like that's a lot of money. And they didn't take off because of the amount of money that it took to buy them. And then Winchester just never made it back. No. And it sucks. And then they made a Model 88. And then the Model 100.
Which still didn't take off.
No, which still didn't take off.
It still didn't take off. They built that 358 Winchester, you know, and I think the best rifle in that 358 Winchester is the BLR. It's just a really good, handy little rifle. But anyhow, Magnum-wise, You know, we Winchester and Remington both backed off and went to these short action ultra mags and the Winchester short mag and the Winchester super short mags, you know, because everybody was going for that. Oh, they don't kick as hard. Bullshit. You put powder in behind the cartridge and it doesn't matter. The pressures are, I don't care what dimensions the heart of that case behind it. It's a cavern that has powder in it that explodes, expands, gases, and the gases go down the tube. And they kick just the same as the other ones do. They fire just the same as the other cartridges do. And it's a matter of the 31 flavors again.
Yeah. And I think the biggest misconception on a closing thought, after all these cartridges that we have discussed in the last episode and this one, I think the biggest misconception that always sets me off, that always grinds my gears, is people saying, oh, this cartridge kicks more than this one because it's this shape, or this rifle is this and this and this and this. And there's one thing out of everything that's not going to change, and it's completely different than guns, but it has to do most with firearms and recoil, is Newton's law. One of his laws, I forgot which one it was. It is, with every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. There's no such thing as a gun's going to kick more with a certain type of powder or a certain type of case shape. No, it depends on how fast that bullet is gonna, and you don't feel recoil until a bullet is out of the barrel. So if you're yanking the trigger or you're doing whatever and it's missing, it's on you. The bullet's already out of the end of the barrel by the time that it matters how accurate you are. And that's always been a pet peeve of mine. And I never really say anything, and it's always just been a thing that's bothered me, where I go, you know what, it doesn't matter. I mean, you and I shot through 40 rounds of .378 Weatherby, and that was the worst experience with a firearm that I've ever had in my entire life. And I will never pick up a .378 Weatherby in my entire life ever again. And it just, I don't know, it's always been baffling, where you go, how could a 375 H&H that comparably shoots about the same exact velocity per ratio on weight for a 338 Win Mag, how could it kick harder than a 338 Win Mag? Well, that's where you go, oh yeah, 358 winch or 358 Norma Mag kicks harder because it shoots a heavier bullet faster than both of them. And that's where it just goes to conditioning. You just have to condition yourself for larger rifles or larger calibers with magnums. You just have to get used to them. I had to get used to them, but that was out of something, out of a personal vendetta that I had for a specific deer that you remember. I don't know. I think it's just whatever you are most comfortable shooting. Honestly,
that's what it comes down to. Felt recoil is, based on the stock shape, for the most part, the weight of the rifle, and the weight of the powder charge behind the weight of whatever that bullet is. And the heavier the bullet is and the more powder you put behind it, the more recoil you're going to get.
Yeah.
The lighter the bullet you get, you know, the less the powder you put in there, the less of a kick you're going to get. That's why a lot of people like to shoot that .257 Weatherby. It shoots fast, it shoots flat. Yeah, it burns a lot of powder. Yeah, it burns barrels up.
Kicks but like an .06, though.
It kicks exactly like a .30-06.
In a light rifle.
In a light rifle, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Same with the .270. The .270 Weatherby.
this Magnum thing has gone up and down and up and down and up and down over the years, and I've owned two of the very, very first short mags. In fact, I still own one of the very, very short mags, the 6.5 Remington mag, which I think, you know, for the most part is a great cartridge for where I'm at right now.
Yeah.
You know, it was meant in that short action to shoot a 120 grain bullet, but
I say it's better than the 264 Winchester.
It's
more efficient.
It's more efficient. Let's say, yeah, it's more efficient. You could probably work, and it's bullet selection too. 6.5 bullets, you know, over. I mean, if you had a choice between a 6.5 and a 7mm, I'd go with the 7mm every time because I can go anywhere, and I can find high quality, you know, bullets in 284 caliber everywhere. 6.5, there's only a handful.
Yeah.
There's more than there were a long time ago.
Well, no, there's a hell of a lot more now with the damn 6.5.
Still, 7mm, you can go, and the same with 30 caliber. Mm-hmm. 30 caliber, there's everything from like the little tiny 110 grain, you know, round nose all the way to, you know, the 250 grain wood lays out there.
Yeah.
You know, I like those, you know, the 350 Remington mag, you know, which shoots, because it's hampered by the short box magazine, but if you put it in a longer box magazine, you might as well shoot a 35 Whalen.
Which takes us back to the first episode.
It should go back to the first episode. So why did we go anywhere else? So now we're coming back to the 30-06. So we've come full circle, and it's based on your personal preference as to how far you feel comfortable shooting. And, you know, you see all these, it makes me sick a lot of times to see these hunting shows, you know, using 6.5 by 284, the 6.5 Creedmoor, the 6.5
PRC, 6.5 300 Weatherby,
you know, all these 6.5 cartridges that are out there now, because that's supposed to be the cure-all,
like,
you know, and it does, it does, but you know, and I forget who it was that. That's all he carried was a 6.5 by 55 Swede.
Which is a great cartridge. You know?
And
for deer.
Well, you know, it was used on moose really effectively in you know, the northern portions of Europe over there. But
they were shooting 160 grain bullets.
They were shooting 160 grain.
They were bonded.
Bonded bullets, yeah. So, you know, again, it's shot placement and, you know, how far are you going to shoot? The accuracy of the rifle, you know, nowadays it's pretty mundane. I mean, you can't go anywhere and not see some kind of a rifle that's like a $3,000-$4,000 rifle, but how much better does it really shoot than that model 700 that I'm going to go buy, you know, for $400?
Exactly. In 7mm Remington mag or 30-06.
300 Win mag.
It's going to shoot great.
Yeah.
Honestly, I mean, there are so many manufacturers right now that guarantee sub-minute or one MOA at least with ammunition that they have, that they say premium ammo. If you shoot premium ammo, you'll get a minute. And it's like, wow, look at the 348 Winchester. This is a huge digression. But look at the Model 71 Winchester, where out of the box, it was a 4-inch gun at 100 yards. We've come a long ways. And that's where it goes into more and more where you go, yeah, it is your personal preference. But I'm gonna stick with my 30-06 and my 338 Win Mag.
I don't have much more in there anymore that I reach into unless I'm gonna go play with a rifle. But, you know, I have a 30-06 and a 35 Whalen, and those two rifles right there will cover anything I need to hunt. And the 358 doesn't get much use anymore after leaving Alaska.
I shot a bear up there, so it got...
Shot a bear, it's, you know, it's done its thing. It's got
elk. It got carried everywhere.
It's got elk, it's deserves its retirement, but You know, it's funny that you even mentioned the 348, because the 348 is another one of those things where you look at it and go, what was the 348? 5110 Winchester.
Yeah, it was.
So somebody necked it down, you know, somebody mm-hmm. went after that. And the whole thing is it's just a hobby. It's fun to be able to take something and put your own stamp on it.
Yep.
You know, let's blow the 3040 Craig out. What do we come out with? 44 Van Hooten, you know?
Yeah, which turned into a 444
Marlin. You know, so it depends on what you want. The 3040 Craig is a good cartridge too. You know, it's rimmed. It was set up to be something that it wasn't. It wasn't supposed to be in a bolt action gun. Yeah. It was supposed to be in something like the, you know, the model 97 Winchester.
Yeah.
You know, which, you know, had, all, you know, let's blow it out and put a 35 caliber bullet on top of it.
And 35 Winchester.
Yeah, let's blow it completely out and put something in it that's big enough to put a 405. And now, you know, you've got a 405 Winchester.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, to go back, it's just, what are you shooting? And how far? And that's the question is, you know, the differentiation between a 308 and a 300 Remington Ultramag is distance.
Yeah.
And that's it. Yeah. That's all it is.
Exactly.
It's distance.
Yeah.
Do you want to shoot 1,000 yards, or are you just going to shoot 150, 250 yards? You're going to shoot 250 yards. You know, you could probably get away with a 30-30 even if you wanted to, depending on what you're hunting.
Exactly.
But that's what the whole Magnum thing is all about. It's rifles are rifles. And they're just fun.
Yeah.
It's fun to have them in all different flavors.
It is.
Even though they all do about this, they all do the same thing. They may have a different trajectory. They may have, you know, they may be heavier, they may be lighter. You know, I've got a range gun that I take out there that has a 28-inch barrel and a detachable magazine, and I can shoot it 1,000 yards all day long because of the Humajigets and all the cherry willets and everything that I can put on it, and I can shoot, you know, that far. Maybe I'm going to do cowboy shoots.
Yeah.
And I don't need that.
You all need, like, 100 yards.
I need 100 yards.
And that's a long ways.
And it doesn't matter what the accuracy is with it. It's just all in what you want to do.
Yeah,
and
it really is.
Just having a good time doing it and
being comfortable.
It's for fireside fuel.
Yeah.
For everybody to fire up the old, you know, what's better than what's better.
Yeah.
You know, the old 270 Winchester 30-06.
30-06 versus 300 Weatherby.
Yeah, 30-06 versus 300 Weatherby, yeah.
Yeah.
I could go over on this other side of the canyon and catch that bullet in my hat.
Yeah, it's just, I think that's the biggest thing out of all of this. Well, looks like we are coming up on time. You got any closing comments? Anything?
I know they're going to ask. Somebody's going to ask out there, what would he do if he was going to do it? So if I was going to go build a rifle right now, what would I build?
What would you build?
So I would build an old school rifle. Actually, if I was going to pick something out right now, it wouldn't be a Remington Action. It would be a bolt with an extractor claw, and it would be in a 7mm Remington mag with a 26-inch barrel, and I would most likely put my favorite optics on it, loophole. I'd put a loophole of some flavor on top of it, and I would put a brake on it. I know that everybody and their brother hates brakes that are around me, but it has no, you know. And with a brake on that 7M,
there would be no recoil.
There would be no recoil, and I could shoot a 160 grain bullet, 160 grain Occubon,
yeah,
out of that 7 mag.
Or Nosler or whatever.
Whatever, and I know that Nosler, I can kill everything.
Here in the West, in Alaska.
Even in Alaska, you could kill everything with it. But I mean, I don't know that I'd want to carry it as a bear medicine thing.
It worked, though.
It will kill bears, and I've seen, I know guys up there that hunted with them up there, but that would be the rifle that I was going to make, because I know you'd always talked about, let's make a 26-inch 8 mag.
Ah.
Yeah, you can't get the bullet selection. 7 mag, yeah, you can get the bullet selection. You can get the powders. Brass is cheap. Brass is extremely cheap.
Yeah.
I can pretty much have a rifle like that. I could probably find a rifle like that with a 26-inch barrel.
Yeah, yeah. Winchester makes them.
And that's what I'd run with. If I was going to start all over again and I didn't want to, I didn't have any of all this other stuff that's tainted into my mind, that's the rifle I would carry. 7mm Remington Magnum, 160 grain, you know, bonded, you know, A-frame, some kind of bullet with a good 26-inch tube on it, and a brake four to 14. I don't know. I think I'd maybe go just to like a 2.5 to 10.
2.5 to 10. Oh yeah.
You know, with a BDC in it.
Huh. Yeah.
And that would be the rifle. That would be my Magnum rifle that I would carry, I think, at this point in time, if I was going to build a rifle nowadays.
Yeah.
And I'd probably wander up to Cody and have Randy build one for me.
Right. Exactly. Well, thank you very much for being on the show.
No problem.
Yeah. And thank you, everybody, for listening. And you have yourself a great day.